Welcome to the Legacy and Faith Show, featuring estate and tax attorney Paul Grant. The Legacy and Faith Show is about the journey of discovering how to create plans that protect wealth and family values for generations. And now the host of the Legacy and Faith Show, Paul Grant.
Along with co-host Mark Holland, another edition of the Legacy and Faith Show with Paul Grant. Hi there, Paul.
Hi, Mark.
Hey, we are continuing a discussion in the Foundations series.
Yes.
And how to take care of that surviving spouse. Perhaps you precede your spouse in death and you want to be sure that that spouse is taken care of.
Yeah.
And the rest of the family as well. But all of these considerations can be a little daunting.
Yeah, and that's really it, is that most married couples that walk in, we want to make sure that indeed the surviving spouse is well taken care of. So when we use a trust, the typical trust forms what is known as an AB trust or a safe harbor trust or a Q-tip trust. All these things relatively mean the same thing. So if we have a revocable living trust, so that means during your lifetime, you and your spouse are in full control of the assets. Or if you're single, you are in full control of all of your financial assets that are put into the trust. We develop the trust. That's the legal mechanism, the actual document itself. That's why I have to walk you through all these different questions and find out what your vision is for you and your family and your spouse if you're married. So all that is put into a document. Then we have to go through the process of actually taking your assets and retitling them. And in other words, I don't own anything in my personal name except for my vehicles and my IRAs. So therefore, everything else is ran under my trust. So all my checking accounts are not in the name of Paul Grant. They're in the name of my trust. And then in the trust, my wife and I both have access and we're both called trustees. Now, the reason you want to get all of your assets, except for the two I named, into the trust is because then the instructions that we've created and taken all this time to create, they will attach to anything. The instructions attach to every asset that's in the trust. So when I have my bank account in the name of my trust instead of in my personal name, the instructions of the trust attach to that. So now if I'm walking around life and I have an illness, I need long-term care, I am unable to manage my assets, the instructions that we've created in that trust of on how to take care of me during my lifetime attach so that the successor trustee who is going to come in to manage that, they have clear instructions. That's actually a discussion that we had in this Foundations discussion, this Foundation series quite a few weeks ago. Again, you can find all that at legacyandfaith.com. So go back and listen to what does it mean to go through a time period of disability. So we need to get everything into our trust because then it attaches. So we don't put IRAs because by tax law, they have to be you have to have that in your personal name. Otherwise, it's immediately taxed.
And yet that's often the largest asset is the IRA.
Yes,
so
but
that seems kind of counterintuitive.
Yes, but we've addressed IRAs a couple shows back in this series on what we do with them. So again, head over to legacyandfaith.com. We've discussed that at length on how it gets pointed to the trust. But make sure you get really good legal advice with your trust and IRAs and how they are supposed to be blended together.
Okay.
Make sure that you don't just take something from the radio show that is educational in nature and not legal in nature. Always get really good advice with how to manage your IRAs. They are very tricky, and we don't want an unnecessary tax or an unexpected tax to come to roost if it's not properly done. So, and then vehicles, I don't put in trust just because there's a non-probate way to transfer those, specifically if you're married or have kids and other scenarios. So, so we got to get everything into the trust. Then all these instructions attach. And so if I was the first to die, now the instructions attach for my spouse in how we have determined together the trust is going to operate. So in a traditional trust, those assets will be split. Okay. So a decedent's portion will be created and a survivor's portion will be created. That's called, again, an AB trust. It's the most common thing that a revocable living trust will do. Unfortunately, I've seen trusts that don't do this, and it causes a tax problem. Why do we do it? Because number one, we want to make sure that we utilize the tax exemptions that are available. So in Washington state, if you die with more than $2.2 million, that's $2,193,000, but who's counting? Then a tax may start in your on your assets. So we want to make sure that that we utilize what is available by law. We don't want to give unnecessary taxes. Most estate taxes are unnecessary taxes. I can, for most clients, save them all of their estate tax. And if not, we can save a large portion of it. So it just depends. But most estate taxes are unnecessary. So therefore, the most common thing that happens is that the trust splits in two. So the surviving spouse is going to have a trust that that is part of the decedent's and part the surviving spouse. Now, we build a bridge between those two because if I were to die, I want to make sure that my wife is well taken care of. So my trust, it says, baby, I love you so much, you can use anything in my trust that you want. It doesn't perfectly say that, but in essence, that's the spirit of what it says, which is you can come and utilize everything in my decedent trust because that is typically my first goal. Make sure my spouse is well taken care of financially, that my spouse will not have a financial concern. So that is one of the most common things that a standard revocable trust does, is that it splits at death. Now, unfortunately, if you do not have a relationship with an estate planner, the surviving spouse in their grieving is not going to go back to an attorney at that time. As a matter of fact, I have seen so many widows or widowers. I'm not sure both of them. I should know this, but I really don't.
Widows is the woman and widower is the
widower.
Man.
Widower. Okay. So I did have it right. See, look at me go. I've watched so many surviving spouses, there you go, surviving spouses, come into the office and they've never done anything with the estate plan and it's been 5 and 10 years since they lost their spouse. Okay, without a good relationship with your estate planner, you can do all of this work. We can walk through all of these different steps. And yet, when the trust itself is not administered properly, it still may fail. It may not accomplish your purposes because if there's not a strong relationship, you're not reminded about, hey, when something happens, go back and make sure that the trust splits into this AB trust, into a decedent and into a survivor's trust. So for everything that we try to do, a trust is only as good and only as strong as it is administered. It must be properly managed in order to work properly. And I think most people out there would go, well, that kind of makes sense. If I just put my money into a savings account and never administrate it, well, then I just get what I get. In past years, when interest rates were so low, you would have gotten zero. Right. Well, now you get a little bit better. So we know that we need to administer things properly. And a trust is no different. When one spouse dies, it is imperative that the surviving spouse get to their attorney as quick as possible. As a matter of fact, most mistakes that take me longer to recover are done in the first couple of weeks.
The first couple of weeks.
because the spouse, the surviving spouse, didn't contact us. Okay. If we're contacted, we can guide and make sure that there are not any mistakes made out of the gate. So the first couple of weeks are actually the most critical in contacting your estate planner. If it wasn't us, not a problem. But if your spouse passes away, please get to your estate planner as soon as possible. And if you don't have a strong relationship, then give us a call. You can find everything at legacyandfaith.com. So there's ways to communicate with us. We want to be able to assist. Even if we did not design the plan, we can help you through that process. So in all of this, the most traditional thing that happens is two trusts are formed for the survivor. Now the question comes about with, well, who manages each side of these? Well, if it's the surviving spouse, that's kind of intuitive. It's literally by law, the surviving spouse's assets. They stay in that the surviving spouse's social security number. It stays in their trust. So everything is kind of intuitive with that. But what happens to the decedents? Well, now, because we cannot use the social security number of someone who died, we need an EIN number, okay, an employee identification number, or a TIN number. They're the same thing. And we need to create this irrevocable trust and follow the instructions. So now, can the surviving spouse manage that? In most cases, the answer is yes. But this goes back to, how was the trust ever designed? Is the surviving spouse capable of managing it? Some people have the skill set. Some people don't. Some people may be struggling with health issues, mm-hmm. and they may need assistance. Mm-hmm. So does the plan properly accommodate to ensure the safety of the surviving spouse? Is it appropriate that an adult child come in and actually assist mom or dad, the surviving spouse, at that time? So if they're much older and they're going through the grieving process together, it may be in the surviving spouse's best interest that we have a partner for them, that we have someone who can link arms. Now, if you're in your 50s and 60s and lost a spouse too soon, you're still going through the grieving process, but there is a different sense of control over life that you may still have. Mm. You may have the ability to learn a new skill set, even if you did not manage the money. So, but I've known some 60-year-olds who just say, I don't know anything about finances. My spouse always did that. Okay, well, have we thought through that? And have we gotten the right people around the surviving spouse so that both sides of that trust, the survivors and the decedents, are properly managed? So as we walk into break here, I want to talk about what happens if we give full control to the surviving spouse, or what happens if that surviving spouse gets remarried even. And so let's talk about these issues as we come back at a break.
Okay, you're intrigued by Paul's approach to this subject, the foundations of good estate planning this week, and you want to find out more. How do people get in touch with you, Paul?
Head over to my website, legacyandfaith.com. There's past podcasts, upcoming educational opportunities, ways to communicate with us, all found at legacyandfaith.com.
Back with more of the Legacy and Faith Show in just a few moments.
Can I avoid probate? Will I lose everything if my health becomes compromised? How do I preserve what I have for me and my family? Will the government take it all? This is Paul Grant with the Legacy and Faith Show. These are some of the most common questions we get on a daily basis, and there are solutions for all of these issues. It is time for you to protect your family and what God has placed under your stewardship, and we can help. Go to legacyandfaith.com to find out more about our services and upcoming educational opportunities. That's legacyandfaith.com.
Your photos, slides, scrapbooks, and home movies are invaluable and irreplaceable. Barry Kenny here with the Bear Services. Call us to save them as digital files to be stored electronically and shared liberally. We will even come to you so they stay in your possession. Go to thebearservices.com for more information. That's thebearservices.com.
We now return to the Legacy and Faith Show, featuring estate and tax attorney Paul Grant, and continue today's practical discussion to apply biblical principles for kingdom purposes.
Along with co-host Mark Holland, looking at foundations of good estate planning, particularly as it regards taking care of that surviving spouse. And Paul wants to get into that some more now with What happens about that possible remarriage
of
that sparrow's
boss? Oh, yeah. It's actually a
happens
bigger,
a lot.
Yeah, it's a bigger possibility than what you think. So I have
more
clients,
so with men than women, too.
Definitively. So I have people sit in my office and emotionally at that point in time when I ask, okay, what happens if one of you gets remarried? And if I'm talking to, 60, 70-year-olds, they look at each other and they start laughing and go, nah, I'm never going to get remarried. Oh, really? So we need to address this issue. And I know it's a sensitive issue, but then again, my job isn't to be sensitive with you. My job is to make sure that the plan is going to work according to your vision and your passions, making sure that the ultimate family money is getting to the proper people. So statistically, men get remarried within 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
So if you come into the office, I'll ask you that question. Be sure that you're ready for the test. So how often or within what time frame do men get remarried? Well, we need somebody to help us out because we're helpless. And so therefore, we typically will get remarried statistically within 2 years after losing a spouse. Now, this is derived, these statistics are derived off of a first marriage. So if you've been married multiple times, this is not applicable to you. That I don't know those stats. So this is a first time.
Somebody was married 40, 50 years.
Yep.
They're still going to get remarried within
2 years.
They're going
to get remarried, believe it or not. 2 years. So not a lot of great confidence in men out there is brewing right now with that statistic. I understand. So it's okay. I'm a man. It's fine. So what happens in that scenario? But women, you have a statistic too. A high majority. I'm talking 95% or more of any woman that I have asked this question to, what is the statistic for women getting remarried? And the current wife who is sitting there says, never.
Really?
Never will we get remarried. Well, you're darn close. I know. It was so difficult to train us the first time that, like, why would you want to go through it a second time? So the statistic is 7 years.
7 years.
Yeah.
Okay.
So that's a pretty healthy gap, seven.
If you're 80 and you say that, then that might be.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. So the husband may get remarried, but the wife is going, yeah, never mind. I didn't do a good job with the first one, so why would I want that again? So, okay. So now we have our remarriage. So this is a real possibility, and we have to really pull this apart because here's the thing. I was in law school. I was not an attorney, and the entire estate had been closed by this point, but I was visiting a friend. And this friend's story was one that maybe you've heard before as well, which is dad had recently died. Well, what happened was dad and mom had been married for well over 50 years. Mom dies, and this was about 10 years ago. Well, dad, true to statistics, it took him 3 years, not two, but 3 years later, he gets remarried. Mm. Guess what? He never changes. His estate plan.
Mm.
He holds an old estate plan. And in that estate plan, there were accommodations for his first wife by name. So now we're in a battle. The dad dies. And my friend and his two brothers are saying, we're entitled to something. And the surviving spouse is going, no, I get it all, right? After, I think it had been about 7 years of marriage, 6 years of marriage. So the court looks at the document, and I'm not saying that they're wrong. I'm just saying that this is the problem, is that we had to go to a judge, and a judge gets to decide what the intent is instead of being clear on what your intent is. And so the judge made an interpretation to say that even though his first wife's name was in the document, the intent of the decedent, who we can no longer ask questions to, the intent was to take care of the surviving spouse no matter what the name was. So guess who got all the assets? The second wife.
Oh, wow.
My friend and his two brothers never saw a penny because within a month, as soon as that ruling came out, within 30 days or less, the surviving spouse gave all of those assets to her daughter just to make sure that indeed it wasn't going to be undone. Mm. So there's our story, right? And I think many of us have seen a story like that, that someone else gets remarried and all of a sudden the assets are slipping out the back door. Mm. And that's not exactly what the desire would have been. Well, or so I'm assuming that the desire would have been different. So how do we accommodate for this thing called remarriage? So if we know the horror stories that all the money of the family got to the second spouse. Look, if something happened to me and my wife got remarried, of course, she's in the never department, so I don't know what that says about me. And she were to get remarried, I would want to make sure she's financially healthy. And even if that meant some of that support went to the household of a new spouse. But I really want my kids to get what I haven't used or what my wife hasn't used. I really don't want Bo the tennis pro, who has a nice backhand, to get the remaining sum of what I've worked my lifetime for and trying to help set up my girls properly. So therefore, how do we accommodate? Well, we need to address the issue first. We can't be ignorant of this issue. But do you realize that there's almost no estate plan? As a matter of fact, I will say this. As I think about it here while I'm recording, I don't think I have ever seen a plan come across my desk that I have reviewed that deals with this issue of remarriage. So that tells me that that my plans so far, the only plans that are addressing this, that should not happen, by the way. That's unfortunate. So if it's a real possibility and if plans are not accommodating it, then boy, we're stuck in this possibility of money slipping away from the family into someone else's hands. That person having a claim because they were married, or what if that marriage didn't work out and they got divorced? How much is on the table to be taken out of the estate? Mm. So these things need to be addressed, and we do address them in my counseling process. We do address this issue of what does it look like if you were to get remarried? So if your spouse was to get remarried, do you want them to have full control over your portion? Because remember, when you pass away and you are married, most trusts are going to split into an AB trust, meaning a survivor's trust and a decedent's trust. The most common thing that we do is we give a lot of power and control to the surviving spouse so that they can manage the decedent's portion. Of course, they own their portion, so they can do whatever they want with their money. But now some of the rules kick in, such as, can the surviving spouse disinherit one of my kids? Can they change the boundaries that we've set up for the kids? Mm-hmm. Or can they use unlimited amounts of money for their own care, even if they're remarried? Do they remain in control over that decedent's portion, or do we have an adult child or someone else come in to manage it to make sure that there is an integrity in the money should my spouse get remarried? Mm. All these decisions need to be pulled out. And so I can just say that in my plans, if someone gets remarried and they don't follow the proper protocols in the trust, that they lose their rights to manage that money because then it's going to be protected for the kids. Okay. So if my wife got remarried, she may lose the opportunity to have access and or control over my portion of the trust. Now, maybe you're out there thinking, wow, you really like to control things, Paul. Well, this might be true. But yet, my wife and I have agreed that our value is to ensure that each other is well taken care of financially, that we don't pull the rug out from each other's feet. But yet, if we don't need it, our value is to make sure that the girls get it, not that someone else who intervenes into our life may get it. And so, these are things that we need to talk about and make sure that the plan accommodates This is what makes a really good, strong plan, and so that the plan can be upheld over a long period of time. We mentioned it at the beginning of the show, I think, which is a surviving spouse, they may die within 2 years. They may live for 20.
Right.
So if they live for 20 years, which statistically, 2 years or 20 years are the two common denominators. So how does this plan for 20 years get upheld if I've been gone that long? Well, I may want to make sure my spouse, number one, is well taken care of. I might want to give her control over helping our girls financially or with the design of the plan. But I also want to make sure that ultimately my girls get whatever we have worked on, because that was our common vision. So even if my wife gets remarried, God bless her, but I want to make sure that the family is well taken care of. This can be accomplished, but it is rarely dealt with inside the plans that I review. So we got to ask the hard questions, and we got to make sure that we're dealing with all these different types of scenarios to make sure that the full vision of what you have is going to be realized with good estate planning.
And Planning with Purpose is Paul's company. You want to find out more about his services and how he can help you. How do people get in touch with you, Paul?
Head over to our website. It's legacyandfaith.com. There's past podcasts, upcoming educational opportunities, ways to communicate with us so that we can get together. We'd love to meet you, love to talk about what your vision is. It can all be found at legacyandfaith.com.
It's the Legacy and Faith Show with Paul Grant.
Thank you for joining us for the Legacy and Faith Show. You can find more information about the show and Paul Grant at legacyandfaith.com. Join us next week at the same time as we learn to build God's kingdom and continue our journey on how to protect wealth and family values for generations. All discussions on the Legacy and Faith Show are intended to be about general legal issues. If a situation applies to you, then we encourage you to seek specific legal advice. Please do not rely upon any discussions from this program in place of having a personal relationship with your attorney. Any listener question that may have been answered also does not constitute legal advice and does not establish a client-attorney relationship.